I'm here in Belturbet and I'm talking to Barbara McGinley.
Yeah.
Barbara, what was your maiden name?
McCabe.
And you were, your brother was a victim of the violence.
He was, yeah.
Where were you brought up?
In Ballyconnell.
And what kind of a business was it, or what was your father doing for a living?
Well, my father, for most of his time that I remember, worked for a company called Telephone Cables, and he worked in England, and then he worked in Dublin. But when John died, Daddy had only died very suddenly, 13 months before that, on Christmas Eve, 1984.
So, what was it like growing up in Ballyconnell? How many of you, how many siblings?
There were seven of us.
I put that down there.
Seven. Yeah.
Going to school there, you were brought up as, I suppose, taught by who?
Master Paddy Freel would have been the principal of the National School when I was there. And Sally McManus. Anne Freel, she was the principal's wife. Anne was from Galway. I think Paddy Freel was a Donegal man. And I think he actually came back for John's funeral.
Yeah.
Which was a good number of years, you know, after. He would have taught John at National School too.
And where did John fit in the family? What, was he the youngest or...?
There's three older than I am. John was the third eldest.
Okay.
And there's four younger than John.
So there wouldn't have been much between the two of you then?
No. John was born in 1960.
Yeah.
I'm 63. So.
And, well, I know it's going to be hard for you, but talk to me about the circumstances of what happened.
Well, the morning of Tuesday, the 11th of February, I left home to go to Dublin to buy my wedding dress with my mother and my best friend, and we met my sister in Dublin, and we had a fantastic day. In those times, there was no mobile phones, there was no landline in our home house, we knew nothing. And I was driving a bright blue Volkswagen Beetle at the time, and I knew I had only one headlight. And it was dark when we were coming home. We arrived home, I think, about 9 o'clock at night. In great form, we got the wedding dress, and we were very happy coming home. And when we arrived outside the home house, where John and his new wife of 6 months were living at the time, we seen Father Phil Brady's car outside the house.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother got anxious straight away. She said, "Why is Father Brady's car here?" And when we went in, all hell broke loose. Linda was there, and her hair was, God love her. Linda, being John's wife, her hair was wet because she'd been in the shower when the guards came to give her this news, and she was alone in the house. Now, there was other people there too, including the priest and the doctor, Dr. Brady at the time. And I remember Father Phil Brady saying John had got injured at work. And I remember saying to him, "Well, he's a barman. How could he get injured at work? Did a keg of beer fall on..." You know, I remember saying that. And at some stage then, he didn't immediately say the IRA came in and shot him dead. A little bit later in the conversation, it came out that the IRA had shot him dead.
Why do you think they shot him?
Because they're terrorists, mainly, that's why.
Okay, but did John do something wrong?
Of course not. No. 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 Well, I mean, on that particular evening, he wasn't the only person to die. They shot a 29-year-old man along with him.
In the same pub?
Yeah. He was a policeman. He was a customer in the bar that evening.
Okay.
Derek Breen was his name, from Enniskillen.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And so, what? This is an extraordinary thing to happen. I mean, you know, kind of, was John in any way involved? Like, did he have any...
Absolutely not.
...lenience towards...
None of us had. I'm proud to say that. We were never a political family in any regard.
Yeah.
Not that I would never... never did regard and still don't regard the IRA, Sinn Féin being a political association.
Yeah. And the pub, did it have a name for serving?
I believe it did. We found out after that it did. And I often hear John speaking about the certain policemen. Mm. He knew them. They were nice guys. So we were out for a quiet drink.
Yeah.
These two policemen. And one left a few minutes before the gunman came in. And he survived.
Yeah. And was there any other incident prior to that? That you know, was, you know, was there anything else that happened? Was there? I'm just inquiring. You know, if he was maybe you know, helping out or
John
or doing anything like that to attract. This horrific thing to happen.
Absolutely. Yeah. John was such... He was so innocent.
Yeah.
And naive, maybe.
So he was an innocent victim of the violence.
Absolutely, yeah.
And how devastating was that for your parent, for your mother and your father at the time?
Well, my father had died 13 months before that on Christmas Eve, very suddenly. And my mother never recovered from it.
Yeah.
My mother is still alive. She's 81 today. And she's in a nursing home. In Ballyconnell. Yeah. And she, God help her, what a life she's had since.
Yeah.
You know, my mum was 50 when that happened.
And and yourself and... Did it affect you very badly?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah, yeah. You learn, I remember 9 weeks after John died, watching people who lived very close to us going out to an IRA man's funeral, and he was treated like a hero. That was very hard. People John played with during his childhood. That was hard to watch that.
When John was being buried then, did he have a big funeral?
Yeah, huge. Yeah.
And a lot of people sympathising. A lot of people,
yeah, yeah. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. He was only 25. You know, he's younger than my eldest son is now. He was younger than... He was, you know... Such a young guy, for his life to be taken from him.
Who has anybody been held accountable for what happened?
No, never.
And is that hurtful in itself, that nobody has been brought to justice?
It is, yeah. Well, it's hurtful, but I'd like to see justice for John, because his life was taken from him.
Hmm.
And he was just an innocent barman who had lost his job, he was only 6 months in that job.
Yeah.
And he had worked for telephone cables with my dad up until 6 months before that, and he was made redundant. Mm. And he took that job just to tide him over.
So was he in the wrong place at the wrong time? Is this...
I don't think there's such a thing, you know.
Was he targeted then?
He was targeted because... There was policemen in the pub.
And that's the only reason?
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely the only reason. Yeah.
Imagine. I mean, but was there any help? You know, when something like this happens and the family are devastated, you know, there's a murder, a killing.
Yeah.
Was there any counselling or, you know, people obviously suffered post-traumatic stress from an incident like that?
There wasn't really any help, no. Not really in the way that you suggest. There wasn't, no.
So what, remind me again, what year was he?
February 1986.
So that's 30 years ago now, roughly.
31. Yeah.
In all that length of time, was there much spoken about his death? I mean, had it been forgotten and just brushed over?
Well, we always had an anniversary mass for John. In later years, we've had a joint one now for him and my father, because they died so close to each other.
But that's between yourselves.
Yeah.
But has there been any kind of recognition for his death?
No, there's been plaques put up along the Woodford Canal in Ballyconnell where John played as a child. There's been headstones erected for former IRA people who have nothing to do with the area. So I don't walk along the canal in Ballyconnell because I'd have to walk past that.
And that must be hurtful too. Do you find though that, you know, by getting some help or getting some, was there any compensation for his debt as a matter of interest?
Financial compensation?
Yes, or anything like that.
There was a very small amount for each family member and another amount for his wife at the time. Now, I don't know what sum was involved, but it was a paltry sum.
And did that come from the Irish government?
No. It came from the British government. But it's not even worth...
Yeah.
It was hundreds, not thousands.
Yeah.
It was hundreds of pounds.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, the what happened afterwards? The pub, I mean, did it just close down or...?
Well, you see... When the IRA went in that evening to execute two policemen and John died and Derek Breen, one policeman, they also left a bomb in the pub to blow it up. And a police patrol car got there before that happened, and only for that we would have never even seen John's body. Because the police risked their lives and went in and took his body out.
My goodness. And
before it went off, did the bomb go off?
Yeah, the bomb did go off. The place was destroyed. Now, it was rebuilt, but the same family never took it over again. The people who owned it.
Mm-hmm. And what were their names?
They were lovely people.
Who were they?
McGrory's from Maguire's Bridge.
Yeah.
No, I think they're both deceased now.
Yeah.
But they were a lovely couple, I have to say. Sonny and what was his wife's name? I can't remember his wife's name now.
But and of course the location of the pub is Maguire's Bridge is so close to the border whoever did do this, you know, could retreat.
And they didn't live that far away from it either.
All right, okay. Were all these things going over in your head, like why and for what reason? And then
they did, and they still do.
Do they?
Yeah. They just still do.
And if you're familiar with those people, it must be very hard to pass them in the street. And
well, thank God, I don't see them.
Yeah.
But I know who they are.
Yeah.
And they do. They know who they are too.
Yeah. And to live with that, though, you know, that's.
Well, I suppose was fortunate because the year that John died in 1986, I was engaged to be married, and I postponed my wedding because John was supposed to give me away. And I just called the wedding off till the following year.
Yeah.
So we were married 30 years this year.
Yeah.
And it I remember nobody felt like a wedding, even then. The family, like,
yeah,
didn't. Especially my poor mother, like.
But is it a thing that you just have to get on with it and
yeah,
and
you do. Just, yeah,
just keep going.
You do. Yeah.
Would you have liked to have seen more help coming? I know that it's got, when you see a monument put up down in Belturbet here for, well, there were two innocent people that were killed there. Would you like to see a monument put up?
I would. For John, yes.
Do you think he deserves that?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. I do. Because he, as far as I'm concerned, every murder victim is innocent because nobody deserved to be murdered.
Yeah.
And he certainly didn't. Because he was just trying to earn a living. He wasn't doing anything illegal. He was a barman. He done what he was paid to do. He served any customer who came into the bar.
Yeah.
Like, I met the family of that policeman that was murdered along with him. Several times they came up to visit. They came to John's wake. They came to his funeral.
Yeah.
They were lovely people. Yeah. I never met Derek Breen personally, but he had a 9-month-old daughter at the time. And John, sure, John was only married 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And the other policeman who would have been killed as well if he hadn't left the pub.
I met him also, did you?
What was his name?
His name was Paddy Doherty.
Okay, and the other policeman's name was?
Who died. His name was Derek Breen.
Oh, yes.
He was from Lisbelaw, outside Enniskillen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did it matter whether you were from the north or the south? Because does it... You know, when life is taken so easily like that, and you know...
Of course it doesn't matter.
Do you know?
No, sure, I was working in Enniskillen at the time, myself.
Yeah.
I worked there for nearly 10 years, and I was very friendly, but I would never think, well, what religion is this person, or what religion is that person?
Mm.
It just wasn't raised like that.
Yeah.
You know, I cross the border every morning to go to work.
Yeah.
And I continued to do so after John died, obviously, I had to. But it made me think about what really was going on in the Troubles at the time, when it would affect somebody who lived the other side of the border.
Yeah.
Like John did. And was just going down to work every day and coming home at night, whatever it was, whatever shift he'd be on. We would have never thought of that before until that happened. So I continued working for about 2 years after that.
What were you doing?
I worked in Wellwards.
Okay.
Yeah. Who, as the... There would have been... Wellwards sold to Morrison's, and then Morrison's sold to Asda, so that's where it started off. Yeah. A local Enniskillen man owned that business.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And did you commute yourself up and down all the time?
Yeah.
So you passed the border each day?
I did, yeah.
The checkpoints and that?
Yeah. Well, at the time, for a year after we got married, I lived in Ballyconnell. And there was an army checkpoint on the border. I used to go through that every morning and then coming back at night. Not that long after that, I remember going to work on the Monday morning after the Poppy Day bombing in Enniskillen, and that was tough.
Yeah.
That was very tough. Brought back a lot of memories and
Of course it did, yeah. And did it almost become part of everyday life that you just turn on the radio and there's another shooting, another killing?
Oh, yeah, and you were far more aware of it then, and you'd be thinking about it quite acutely because you knew what those people were suffering, you know, because you were there yourself.
Of course, because it came to your door.
Yes, yeah.
What do you feel about the do you think that it'll ever you know, that if people come together that it might help, you know, that if
help to avoid it happening again?
Happening again, yes.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's already been shown.
Mm-hmm.
But I also believe that. And I'm going to say this because I think it's a fact that people with terrorist background should never be allowed to hold office. They shouldn't. That's my personal opinion. Shouldn't.
When the Good Friday Agreement came to happen, prisoners were released. Were you happy to see the prisoners released?
No, I wasn't. No. No. Well, I know one prisoner that was released. I know of him. I don't know him personally. I wouldn't want to know him personally.
Mm.
But he'll have to meet God sometime. And he doesn't live far from here. And he was involved in John's death.
Mm-hmm. Well, just talk to me about the you know, kind of, it's all changed now.
Yeah.
We have peace and we have, and I know it'll never go away. The pain will never go away because it just doesn't. But do you think, though, that it would be a good thing to see the people in the north and the people in the south that were victims of the violence coming together and sharing their stories?
I do. I think that would be an excellent thing to happen. It'd be good because, you know, I think to be in a position to be able to feel empathy and sympathy with another person who has suffered and whose their loved one has been taken away from them would be immensely healing for all parties. I think that.
Yeah.
Definitely. I've never actually met personally anyone. Like, we were down at that unveiling of the nice plaque at the church in Issaski, but we weren't actually introduced to other people. We didn't know anyone there.
This is the plaque that was
to
all the victims of the violence that was put up at the side of the church, and
just immediately nearly outside the front door of the church. I should have tried to remember when that was for you coming today now.
Yeah.
It would be maybe, it could be between 10 and 15 years ago.
I see.
It's quite a time ago away.
Yeah. And John's name's on it.
John's name is on it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's not many Catholic names on it now, but there's a few.
Yeah.
Not that doesn't matter.
No.
The fact that it's erected in a Protestant, you know, Church of Ireland graveyard is even more symbolic and special. You know, his name is not commemorated in any other cemetery, Catholic cemetery, only his own grave that we put up, the family.
Yeah. And that's his only, that's the only plaque anywhere.
That's the only plaque anywhere. Yeah. 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 True, and you know, as a mother myself now, I know what my mother suffered. God.
Mm. And she's still alive, isn't she?
Yeah, she's quite bad dementia now.
Yeah.
Yeah. She never would very seldom mention John now.
Yeah.
But I was always very close to my mother. And how she got over, she didn't get over it, but how she coped at the time, it must have been horrendous.
Oh yeah, of course.
For her.
Yeah.
You know, she was only after losing her husband 13 months before that, and then I never thought Mammy would live to be this age. After, you know, she had a lot of, an awful lot of tragedy to deal with in her life. You know, she was a widow at 48. At 49, her son had died under such tragic circumstances. But it was, I mean, the local doctor, Dr. Brady, was ringing. Do you remember Dr.
Yes,
Brady?
Yeah, I remember her, yes. Yeah. She lived in my, up in Daisy.
Oh,
there.
She was a wonderful person.
Yeah.
Up until maybe 10 years ago, no, I think Dr. Brady is deceased now, but she would have, she was in her 90s now.
Yeah.
And she used to, even years after, she was in a nursing home herself in Dublin.
Yeah.
And one day I was in Mammy's and I answered the phone and it was Dr. Brady.
Oh, go away.
Ringing my mother for a chat. This was when Mammy was well, you know, before she had dementia.
She needed that, you know, and it was lovely that that could happen.
She was so, but she was an exceptional doctor, like, you know, she was, she was, you don't, the likes of her wouldn't be around anymore.
Yeah.
You know, they would be thinking of people that many years after something happened and keeping in touch, and it was a lovely, lovely, lovely thing. And very supportive of her. That's not that terribly long ago. That could be about 10 years ago, roughly.
I imagine, yeah. And she still kept in touch.
She
yeah.
did.
Yeah.
Every, she might only ring once or twice a year,
yeah,
but she did it,
she
you
did.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I make us a cup of coffee?
Oh, you can. Oh. You, well, I do.
You can if you want to, not me.
Just to have a little break.
Just to have a little break, yeah. So tell me about the wake for John in the house.
Yeah.
Did Paddy, the other man, Paddy Doherty, did he come?
He did. He did come, yeah.
It was quite dangerous for him to come.
He came to the wake and he came up for weeks after, following. We would never know that he was coming. He would just come. And the priest, Father Phil Brady, might have been there at the time because he was enormously supportive. I remember he came 7 evenings a week.
Yeah.
And Paddy Doherty would arrive. There could be someone else with him. And he'd come in and he'd sit for hours. We never knew who brought him there. If he drove himself or whatever it was, you know, it's, and we'd chat, and it was just, you know, through different conversations for weeks and maybe months after, and on ad hoc evenings he would come up.
And was it, he was risking his life then?
He was, yeah, he was, to come up to support us. And he didn't know any of us personally before that. He never met us. He'd have known John's wife.
Yeah.
Linda.
Yeah.
At the time. And I remember finding that very comforting.
Yeah.
And I found it very supportive. You know. And then he was, several months after that happened, he was transferred away up to country somewhere. Northern Ireland, and we never heard from him again.
Yeah.
So I'd have thought he, well, I was 22 then, so I guess Paddy would have been in his late 40s, maybe mid 40s. I think he would have been about that age.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think he was Detective Sergeant and Derek Breen was Detective Constable at the time. If my memory, I hope that's correct now.
Yeah.
I think that was his
rank.
His rank, yeah.
And directly after John's death, just tell me, how did it affect you personally?
Well, I remember about 6 weeks after John's death, I was 22 at the time, young, single. I was going out with my with Tig, who's now my husband at the time. And I remember us being up in a certain bar in Ballyconnell and neighbour of mine and friends, well, when I say friends, they were acquaintances, singing IRA songs at the bar. Now, I'm sure they didn't do it directly to hurt us, but I remember I was devastated and I got so upset. We had to leave straight away. Just couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
And for years after, I didn't set foot in a pub in Ballyconnell. Couldn't. Even when they used to go around selling the Anfoblock magazine, that upset me so much because I knew where the funds were going. And it was such a good seller. Maybe they still sell it today, I don't know.
Oh, it's still, I see it on the shop shelves,
all right,
yeah.
I remember in the issue that came out immediately after John's death, the headline was, "Mission successful, but big fish got away." Oh, because yeah. one policeman got away.
Yeah.
I can quote that off the record like that. I remember it so well.
Yeah.
I found that very
callous,
intimidating. Callous, you know, we don't.
In other words, John didn't count at all.
He got in the way, and he shouldn't have been there.
Imagine reading something like that.
I didn't personally read it, but
you saw it.
And thank God, I never bought the magazine either, ever.
Yeah.
Even before it happened.
Yeah.
But that's the propaganda that was going out in it.
And the. So these kind of, because at the time, you know, you were right in the middle of the Troubles. And
the hunger strikes.
Yes, yes.
And I do recall that certain, you know, childhood people that I would have been not hanging around with, but would have been exposed to, they were big supporters of what was going on and how they thought, their families obviously thought, their parents, how wrong it all was, and parents going out to the hunger strikers' funerals at the time. Like, I was only a young teenager back then, and
but there was a lot of intimidation, really, wasn't there?
There was a lot of it going on, yeah, but we were blind to it all. Because we never got involved in it, in the Troubles. We weren't supporters and we never spoke out against it either.
So your house was never a Republican house?
Ever. Ever. Never. It was never a political house or a Republican house. We just, my parents just...
And they came from...
they were both local
people. They were both local. Your parents came from this area.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
And they were Catholics.
They were both Catholic people, yeah. My father worked very hard for a living. There were seven of us. And he spent a lot of our childhood in the UK. And he came home several times a year.
Yeah.
And he finally got transferred back to Ireland with the same company. And he used to come home. He lived immediately before Daddy died. He was able to travel up and down every day to work.
Yeah.
But for years, Daddy was away, you know. And Daddy only ever seen one of his children married, and that was my eldest sister's wedding.
I know. In those days, they used to go to England and send home the money and
Daddy
that's
did. It,
that's what
yeah,
he did.
It came by in the post by registered mail every week.
Yeah.
To the post office in Ballyconnell in cash.
Yeah. And that was what kept your mother going then.
That kept Mammy going, yeah. And she had a big family to raise.
Yeah.
Well, at that time now, there would have been five of us, you know, when Dad was in the UK. That, and my eldest brother, he would have probably have left home maybe at that stage. So there would have been four of us depending on that money to come, and my mother.
Of course.
Every week. Yeah.
To live on.
Yeah.
And then he started to go out and get jobs, and, you know.
Yeah, my mother educated us all, and we were all sent to secondary school. And she was, then she took a job then too, a little minding children, and she worked for the local Garda station too, up as the, you know, making the tea and doing the little tidy ups afterwards every morning. And
yeah,
they were very good to her, they were very supportive too. I will also say, and this is just coming to me now,
okay,
3 years before John was shot dead, one night he was down with his fiancée at the time, who then became his wife, and he was parked at Brackley Lake.
Yeah, the lay-by, I just heard about that. Yeah, I'd forgotten. If I heard of it way back, I'd forgotten it. But I heard about it today in Brian McGarren's.
You tell me that.
It just came back to me.
Okay, tell me what happened.
It was about maybe 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and he had pulled in at the, just at the lullaby there.
At the lullaby,
overlooking Brackley Lake, and this car pulled up in front of him. I think it was a Ford Sierra, if my memory serves me right. And he was sitting there with his girlfriend in the front seat beside him. And next thing, this man came up to the window and knocked at it. And he put a shotgun up to John's face, and they hijacked the car. And they locked John in the boot of the car that they arrived in, and they took a naked person, a man, out of the boot and transferred him to John's boot. And we later found out that that naked person was a guard who they had abducted in Sligo earlier that day, and their car ran out of petrol, or was getting low in petrol, and they seen John parked up. So they actually abducted his girlfriend on the same night and brought her as collateral. She, you know, she's coming with us, and don't you dare say anything. They locked John in the boot of the car, and he was obviously he was petrified. He didn't know what to do. And eventually, when he thought it was safe, he kicked his way out of the boot and raised the alarm. And I remember him coming into my bedroom that night at home, about maybe 12 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
I think it was on a Friday night. And he'd obviously raised the alarm with the Gardaí, and they were looking for this. John had at the time the same car as he had when he was murdered in Maguire's Bridge, a yellow Mirror Fiori car, and they found it abandoned up in Kilnaleg maybe the next day. And Linda, his girlfriend, was handcuffed in the back of it and gagged when the guards found her.
Really?
Yeah. It was Dominic McGlinchey.
Oh, is that who he was?
The brother of Foxo.
Yes.
Yeah. He was the boy they kidnapped him and took soft cars.
Well, at the time he'd fallen out, I think, with the IRA.
Yeah, I think so. He was
From down south, Dominic McGlinchey, wasn't he?
That's right. And that was John. That was your John.
That was our John.
And how many weeks before?
Oh, it wasn't weeks now. It was maybe 2 years.
Oh, it was 2 years of a difference when that happened up to the time.
But I just remember he had the same car.
Go away.
Yeah.
And that was the car that he wound up in his own boot, or at least not but that was the car that
the guard
uncovered.
Abducted, that McGlinchey's gang had abducted and locked in John's boot.
Yes.
Transferred him from their boot into John's boot.
So the car that was spotted then, the night of his shooting, you're saying that was the same car?
No, well, that was the same car that John owned.
Yeah.
That they hijacked.
Yeah.
And they took it, and I remember everybody being on tenterhooks and, oh my God, poor Linda, you know, what are they going to do with her?
And what happened to Linda?
They actually drove to some isolated farmhouse where they held up another household and took their car and transferred. But they didn't take the guard with them. The guard was found in the boot of John's car, and Linda was in the...
Was he alive?
Oh, he was, yeah. They stole his uniform. He was naked.
Yeah.
Completely naked. And I don't know what they done after that. But he was found, like Dom McGlinchey. Didn't he die after that at something else?
But to be part of all of that
story, you'd want to be very unfortunate.
Absolutely, you would.
But there were completely unconnected incidences.
Were they though?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And there was no fear that, yeah, maybe that he would.
Well,
have
John
known
never actually spoke about it. Yeah. He wouldn't.
What did he say to you in the bedroom that night?
He said. I can't remember exactly, to be honest now.
He must have been all flustered up, obviously. He must have been...
Obviously,
really
he was distraught. His girlfriend had just been abducted.
Yeah.
By an armed gang.
Yeah.
You know, they're sitting as you know, love, people in love at a lakeside, and next thing a guy comes up and puts a shotgun in the window.
Well, that was a horrible
And I
thing.
Remember I was working in Wellwoods at the time, and the security that went on at the time, it's laughable now when I think about it. To lock up the safe at night, I would have been on the night shift, and that's why I'm nearly sure it was on a Friday night that happened.
Okay.
The key broke into two parts, and I had one half of the key with me, so I had to go to work the next day with the other half of the key to open the safe.
That kind of security.
Yeah. I think that would have been 1984.
Dominic McGlinchey, that was
Dominic
about the time.
Dominic McGlinchey. Yes. Yeah, yeah. And actually, now that I'm speaking about John's car, the same policeman, Paddy Doherty, who I've just spoken about, when we'd be chatting over things for weeks and months after John died, he had been examining all the details and looking at all the things that had discovered. And at the time, shortly before John took the job in that bar in Maguire's Bridge, he bought a car, not shortly now because he didn't see him, but... down in Clare, County Clare, and the registration of it was D-I-E. I-E was a Clare Reg at the time.
Yeah.
And D happened to be the alphabet number that was in that particular year.
Yeah.
D-I-E was the start of John's Reg, and the policeman that died with him, he was driving a car, D-I-L, and 630 was the digits after the D-I-L Reg. And that was the time they died at 6:30 in the evening. D-I-E 630.
Wasn't that
something?
That
is.
But it's chilling.
When you see that. Yeah. And that marked the exact time of the shooting.
6:30 in the evening. Yeah, on a Tuesday evening.
Oh, that's terrible. And
No, we would have never...
These are the things that go around in your head, of course.
We would have never even discovered that, only we were told it by, you know, the policeman that was obviously in charge of the case or whatever.
Yeah. But to be caught up, you know, to be involved in that as an innocent, another innocent, being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And then being, for the second time, then, you know, finding himself in that situation.
But John, you know, enough nice things. Obviously, I'm going to say nice things about him, but he was a lovely guy. He really was. He was a lovely guy.
And what age was he when he...
25.
25.
Yeah.
But... how can I say this? I'm just so pleased that we sat down this afternoon and that you very kindly told me your story, because it's not easy. It's not easy to go through all these things again, you know?